The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Now that Robert Mueller has told Congress about Russian interference in the last presidential election, what's being done here in Georgia to ensure the security of the next one? And it's not just the 2020 presidential contest stirring things up around here. There are quite a few would-be members of Congress in both parties, and a former Georgia governor has been quite busy lately in his new job as agriculture secretary. Just a few of the items on the bill of fare for this political breakfast, and we've got a place for you. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Glad to have you along. Theron Johnson is back. He's a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and a former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is away, filling in this time former Georgia Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland. Hello to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start, of course, with the hearings involving former special counsel Robert Mueller, particularly the Judiciary Committee, because there were three Georgians on it. There were no Georgians on the Intelligence Committee. Congressman, you have been in a high-profile hearing or two. You were on the Benghazi Committee. Mm-hmm. So before we get into the Georgians here, overall, you've watched how congresspeople behave themselves in these moments. How do you think both sides comported themselves?
I think both sides really did well. I think the Democrats had a message and that they led into that message real well and followed that path. And I think the Republicans, you know, I think they did the same thing. Republicans, we have a couple that tend to lose their temper. And that's never a good point when you lose your temper in a hearing like that. But all in all, I think both sides put together a good game plan. Although I think it could be looked at as elderly abuse because Mr. Mueller was not at the top of his game.
Well, I agree with Congressman Westmoreland that I think it was a win for both parties. I think if Democrats really were to rate the performance of the people on the committee, I think that you clearly tripled down on what a lot of people in American politics believe, and that is that President Trump was not exonerated by this report. But then Republicans really did a masterful job of discrediting, you know, a person who they thanked for his service, well-respected investigator and attorney. But also, as the congressman just pointed out, I mean, it was clear that Mueller was not on his best game. Now what it really boils down to is this is over because, to answer your question specifically, Dennis, I think that Mueller did a really good job of sort of saying before the hearing, hey, I don't want to testify. I don't need to testify. But if I were to testify, I'm going to do a lot of referring you back to the report. And I think we saw a lot of that with his testimony.
And I think the Republicans did prove that Mueller was not as involved in the report as people had given him credit for. And so all of his accolades, you know, about how great he was, it was really his staff that did basically the report. And I think that was one of the things. I don't know if they intended to show it, but I think they did show it. And once it got out there, they just kept kind of hammering on that or trying to prove that point.
So let's take a look at the role that the three Georgians played. On the Republican side, Congressman Doug Collins from the northeast part of the state, he was the ranking member, so he had to carry the Republican flag into this battle. Congressman, he got into it with Mr. Mueller, and he got him to say that nobody fired him. He had a lot of resources and investigators, so nobody was in that way hindering his investigation, at least when it came to resources. And then he debated him about whether collusion and conspiracy kind of mean the same thing in the public mind. In other words, laying the groundwork for having people think when the president says no collusion, he really means there was no criminal conspiracy.
Right. And I think he did a great job. And the leader's job is to kind of lay out the broad picture and then have the members come in behind him and put some meat on the bones that he kind of put out there. And I think they did a good job. I think it did on both sides.
The thing that I was really impressed with is that Congresswoman McBath, who we know is going to have a very, very tough general election.
This is Lucy McBath, whose district is the 6th in the northern suburbs of Atlanta.
Right. Really sort of laid the framework for then Congressman Hank Johnson, who represents DeKalb and Rockdale County, who many of us don't give him enough credit for, but is a very skilled lawyer. Now, politically, he's made some comments in the past that
there's been a gaffe or two.
Yeah, yes. But if you ever were to sit down with him and his wife, Marita Davis Johnson, who's a well-respected lawyer in DeKalb County, he was able to display some of his legal tactics and some of his training as a lawyer. And so I do think that the Democratic Party should be very happy that you had a sort of team effort. But also, I got to give credit to Doug Collins. I mean, he had this parliamentary procedure that he utilized to sort of try in a failed attempt to censure the speaker and Speaker Pelosi when she.
This is going back to her calling the president's tweets racist on the House floor. He moved to have them stricken from the record.
Yeah, and he was unsuccessful. And then they even forced Congressman, your good friend.
Well, no, he was successful.
But then they put them back.
Well,
or they voted to have them removed.
They voted to let her continue to speak on the floor.
Yeah. Right. But then it was successful and unsuccessful.
Yeah.
And it's successful in the sense that it actually forced my hero and one of your friends that you've battled with, Congressman, when you were in Congress and also in the State House, Congressman Lewis, to sort of be very careful in his comments following the speaker's comments to sort of not blatantly call the president a racist. And so Doug Collins is definitely well-respected. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the highest ranking or one of the highest ranking Republicans from Georgia right now.
Yeah, Graves has got them all by about 6 months.
Tom Graves.
Yeah.
But I think Collins, state lawmaker,
has really been the most active lately.
Well, he's done a great job on TV, too. I mean, he's been a good guy.
Well, let's take a look at the Democrats for a moment, because as Theron alluded to, Congresswoman Lucy McBath, a first-termer from the northern suburbs in a real swing district, she spent a little over 3.5 minutes just getting Mr. Mueller to tick off the names of people who had been indicted or convicted in the Russia interference investigation. And then she pretty much left it at that, although she called the president's attacks on the investigation unfair. But nothing really inflammatory there, Congressman. And is that deliberate, do you think, given the district she represents?
Oh, absolutely. I think her part of the program was getting to give him those three yes answers and, thanking him for his service and then, taking some small shot at Trump. Because, I mean, Trump's not that popular in that district. So I don't think that little stick in the eye hurt her. But I think a lot of combative political rhetoric would not have been good for her, especially in that 6th district.
You know, one of the things, Dennis, we don't talk about a lot, and we do it on this podcast, but I think that Congresswoman Lucy McBath has not gotten the credit that she deserves. Let's just talk about what really happened. If you look at, we talked a lot about the governor's race between Stacey Abrams and now Governor Brian Kemp, and that really sucked up a lot of energy. But the biggest win for Democrats in Georgia, and quite frankly, nationally, is that you had a woman, Lucy McBath, who upset and beat an incumbent member of Congress. And so the way she did
it, Karen Handel, at the time had a national reputation because of her battle a few years before with Planned Parenthood.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so now what Lucy McBath's staff is telling her is, let's not give the campaign opponents, whoever the Republican nominee, and even give the people who are running right now an opportunity to have a clip with you just bashing the president at a time where a lot of these disaffected Republican suburban women who voted for her, while they do not like Trump, they do not like the gridlock and the very, very combative nature of both parties in Washington. So I think that she was very methodical in taking that approach.
But then we get to the other Democrat on the panel, and that's Hank Johnson from a very safe district in DeKalb, mostly. And he did something that really didn't become apparent until later on. He got the former special counsel to talk about Don McGahn and the then White House counsel's warning to the president that firing Mueller might be groundwork for obstruction of justice, and then whether the truth was told about all that. Hank Johnson went through that very methodically, and what it did was actually lay the groundwork for what the Democrats did after the hearing, which was, says, okay, McGahn's our guy next. We want him next. Hank Johnson laid the groundwork for that.
You know, I think people might, as Theron said, underestimate Hank. You know, you go up to somebody and you go down in the South and you find some country lawyer, you know, it says, I'm just an old country lawyer. You better grab your wallet. And so
former Governor Barnes was good at that.
No, he was very good at that. And I think that Hank was very methodical in the way that he did lay that out. And so, I mean, like you said, that was a big deal.
You're right. So Democrats had to realize, okay, what's the strategy after the hearing? Because, again, Robert Mueller made it very, very clear, I'm not going to give you any additional details that's not in the report. And so, as you just talked about, is that Mr. McCann is now the person that I think that the Democrats are going to have to persuade the American people is not only should he or do they want him to testify, but we know that polling has shown that the majority of the American people believe that President Trump attempted to try to obstruct the reporting, but they don't believe that he was participatory in collusion, and they don't believe that there was any sort of illegal acts committed that forces him to be impeached. So Democrats now, I guarantee you, are in focus groups. They're polling it to say, hey, if we were to bring this gentleman up and give an additional hearing or testimony, is it going to be any there? And I think that Democrats are going to have to really, really analyze that.
Congressman, we have heard, and we've heard it on this podcast, that most voters don't put the Russia probe or the obstruction inquiries at the top of their list of concerns. They want to hear about jobs and health care. But we've heard Brian Robinson, who used to work for you, say Trump will be the decision point for voters. Two things that might sound contradictory. Can Democrats, or let's say Republicans, in this state run successfully on Trump, pro or con?
I think if they're going to run on Trump's economy, then that's a good thing. Even after this hearing, I do. I mean, people are tired of this. And we have so complicated our laws that nobody knows who the average layman out there doesn't know what's right and what's wrong. I mean, just like the decision on people coming over that didn't seek asylum in somewhere else. You had one judge rule one day that it wasn't legal, one rule the next day it was. And so people are just really confused, Dennis. And I think that if they take some of the good things that Trump has done, and Trump has done some good thing, and take away some of the stupid things that he's done, I think that that's going to determine the voter. You've got some voters that are going to vote politics over everything else. You have some people that's going to vote their pocketbook, and then some people that's going to vote their religious beliefs.
Theron, for Georgia Democrats, there is a wing of the party that says this isn't just a political issue. This is a moral issue. No matter what the politics of this, we have to get in and start an impeachment inquiry on the president. But do Democratic candidates here in Georgia, especially statewide as they look to challenge David Perdue in the Senate, do they run on that?
Well, you may have one or two that may, because the big decision, the people who are running right now for U.S. Senate to beat a Democrat to go against U.S. Senator David Perdue is that you got to win a primary. Mm-hmm. And all the polling and all the conversations I'm having, Congressman, is that there is split. Some people want the president impeached. Some people think that if you go down this impeachment route, then all you do is enthuse a right base that is loyal followers of Donald Trump. And then to the congressman just point out, then you sort of maybe lose some of the moderates and independents that think that impeachment is just too far.
And the Mueller hearings didn't change that dynamic at all?
I think if you watch the 7 hours or even 7 minutes of the Mueller testimony hearing yesterday, if you wanted the president impeached, he did nothing to sway you either way. I think if you watch it and you were sort of on the fence of whether or not Democrats should pursue impeachment, you probably stay where you were. You're still kind of not convinced. And so I can see a Democratic candidate doing sort of like a then Secretary of State Brian Kemp strategy and going far left and sort of reframing the debate within the primary. But I caution that because as Democrats have got to realize in Georgia, we can win primaries. We know that. But can you win a general? And winning generals is putting together the best coalition of voters, north, south, east, and west, Democrats, Republicans, and independent, and really capitalizing on the disaffected Republicans who want a alternative to maybe David Perdue or Trump, but you got to have a message that appeals to them.
Just the, you know, what we were talking about, the Democrats laying this thing out and the part that Hank played, I think if you look at what Pelosi said afterwards, when she said, he can be indicted after he leaves office. And so where the Republicans' big thing about Trump was, let's get away from Trump. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. I think the Democrats are kind of, like Darren said, they kind of it fizzled out with Mueller. They didn't get what they need. So now, as a different avenue, it would be easier for Macbeth or somebody running for the Senate to say, you know what? We just need to beat him so we can put him in jail afterwards. And I think that could be an avenue that they go down.
Theron, let's look at that Democratic Senate primary for a moment. Another name surfaced in the last week or so, the son of former vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman, former Connecticut senator, Matt Lieberman, who lives in Atlanta. But a couple of weeks ago, you said, watch out, there may be an African-American candidate coming up. Is there anything new on that?
Not yet. Stay tuned. But I do think that—
You're not going to announce now?
No. You know, honestly, believe it or not, I've actually been approached about it, and I would tell you what I tell everybody, is that I'm happy right now, newly married, trying to make some money to go into this deep and cold sea of politics in Georgia.
Ask the congressman how much fun it is when you stop.
Yeah, it is not good. But no— let's talk about Matt Lieberman for a second, and don't know a whole lot about him. But I do know some folks have met with him and have been very impressed with him, Dennis. And, you know, let's just go back to Joe Lieberman. I mean, for a while there, Joe Lieberman was like the go-to senator. You know, he was a person that was a part of the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Conference.
Which was a group of moderate Democrats, including Sam Nunn, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, Lieberman was the go-to for Republicans. You know, he was there during the Clinton days. And quite frankly, when he decided to run for president, a lot of moderate Democrats, blue dog Democrats, thought that he was going to do better than he did. So now fast forward, you got Matt, who's young, I think, who is an outsider. One of the things I also talked about on the podcast is, yes, I do think you're going to have another person of color that possibly jumps in this race, but it also is an avenue for sort of an outsider to get in. You know, we also got to wait on Sarah Riggs of MECO, who I'm hearing the same thing you're hearing, that any day now she's going to announce.
It's been any day now for several weeks.
Well, you know, it's Maynard Jackson used to say to me, you know, we can't keep getting ready to get ready. So so she's getting ready to get ready. But I think that, you know, Sarah is a friend, and I know her, and I think she wants to, you know, roll out properly. But now what you're going to see with Ted Terry in the race, Sarah Riggs of MECO coming in.
Terry, the Clarkston mayor and a progressive.
Yep. And now possibly Lieberman. It's going to really be a bigger emphasis on fundraising because Sarah Riggs of MECO doesn't need as much money to get known as fast as, say, Ted or Matt, and even Teresa to a certain extent. But we got to wait and see.
But real quickly, Congressman, Republicans have to be looking at the continuing speculation about a Democratic field, and especially with Teresa Tomlinson coming out in favor of legalizing recreational marijuana. And they must be saying, wow, the longer they wait and the longer this goes on, the better off David Perdue is in terms of organizing a campaign and getting going.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, they got to make their mind. Got to quit getting ready to get ready. But at the same time, I think that they have to look at, and Theron kind of mentioned it before, sure, they can win a primary. I mean, a Democrat's going to win the Democratic primary. But they got to get somebody that can win the general election. And so I think that's going to be a tough decision for the minority community to get together and say, look, even if this person isn't of color, we can win with this person. And so I think that's really a challenge that's going to be out there. And, you know, it depends on how big the field get. My experience is the bigger the field, the worse the candidate that comes out. I just think you don't get the best candidate with a large, large field.
Any recent examples in mind?
No comment.
And there's much more to come. Some thoughts about protecting the next election. That's coming up on the Political Breakfast in just a second or two. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
And we are back on the Political Breakfast. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Democratic strategist Theron Johnson is with us, filling in for Brian Robinson this time, his old boss, former Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland. Congressman, let's start with you. There was a lot of talk in the Mueller hearings about how the Russians are continuing to try to influence not just the last election, but the next one. And it turns out that state elections officials were warned about possible interference in the 2018 elections, hacking attempts to disrupt the infrastructure, misinformation, and social media. And it wasn't that long ago that that threat was dismissed as just theoretical by state elections officials. Are things different now at the Capitol?
Dennis, I served on the Intel Committee, you know, when I was in D.C. And in 2014, we told the Obama administration that the Russians were trying to get into our election system. And I don't think it raised the level of awareness that it should have. And I'm really surprised that it hadn't come out that we did that as a committee to let them know that that was going on, because we were getting that information. And I do know that there was a firm, I'm not going to mention it, that did get caught when the Russians were fishing and got into some of these voter files.
Was that the 2016 episode here?
Yes, that was a 2016 episode here.
And if I recall, Homeland Security Chief, then Homeland Security Chief Jay Johnson, reached out to the Secretary of State and to the administration here and said, we can help you. And Brian Kemp said, federal overreach. So it feels
I do know that Georgia was approached. But I don't know if Governor Kemp, then Secretary of State, I don't know if he blew them off or didn't blow them off, but I do know that they were actually made aware of it. They were one of the states that was doing business with the company that got fished.
Mm. Wow. So now the Secretary of State's office is saying there's no evidence of successful hacking at this point, but after the Mueller hearing especially, are there alarm bells going off in Georgia's capital that say we need to beef things up?
I honestly believe that Brian did do that while he was there as Secretary of State, because there was still no proof that we had actually been hacked. It was just the fact that we did business with a company that was hacked. So we don't know what files were gone. It was a number of states that, and really counties and cities, municipalities and stuff, that had been doing business with them. And so, you know, I don't really know all the internal stuff that happened. I just know that we were made aware that we could have been possibly hacked.
Theron, does election security become an issue that Democrats can run on in 2020, or is that way down on the list again, below health care and jobs and all of that sort of thing?
No, let me tell you why. Because Stacey Abrams, the former gubernatorial candidate, has made it a priority with her efforts through Fair Fight. And so not only will it be, I think, at the top tier of the issues that Democrats will run on, I suspect that it will probably be number one or number two. But this is a unique opportunity for Secretary of State Raffensperger. Now, I've been very complimentary of him because I think that I believe in giving all elected officials a chance. And he got kind of caught up a little bit with the voting machine. Some thought it didn't go far enough with the paper ballots. A lot of people criticized the expense. But let's give him credit. He rolled it out. It's been very transparent. And one thing about the Secretary of State is that he has been transparent. Now, if he's not taking these precautionary steps to know that what we heard from the Mueller investigation hearing and the report is not only if, it's when Russia
And not only Russia now, but other potential actors.
Absolutely. And the congressman and I, we pay close attention to a lot of local governments. But when you have Mayor Bottoms, the mayor of the city of Atlanta, go to the United States Congress and testify about cyber attacks. And so not only is it a question of the state level, I think local municipalities are going to depend on working with his state partner and his federal partners to prevent any of these type of county possible cyber attacks and hacking that could possibly go on with our voting systems.
And Congressman, this as Equifax, although it's not a government, it's a huge influential thing, and the feds just reached a $700 million settlement over that breach 2 years ago. About $425 million of that is going to consumers. So all the signs are out there. All the warning bells are out there. Is anybody listening?
You know, I chaired the cybersecurity subcommittee on Intel, and myself and Jim Himes, Connecticut. Jim and I contacted—
He's a Democrat, correct?
He's a Democrat. Oh, yes, sir. And we contracted the administration, which would have then been the Obama administration, and said, what's offense and what's defense with cybersecurity? I mean, if we get a cyber attack, are we just playing defense with it, or can we go on the attack? We still don't know because, you know, if you get into Title 50, I mean, you get into a lot of these things about what you're doing to create a war.
Mm-hmm.
And then, too—
And whether Congress gets involved.
Exactly. And then, too, you know, you've got these highways of information, Dennis, and so— If it's one exit that these guys are getting off of, you can shut down that exit. I mean, that's great. Can you shut down the highway? Can you stop all the traffic? And a lot of that traffic comes right through the United States. I mean, a lot of all over the world comes through our country.
Do we still know what the nature of the threat is, what the scope of the threat is?
No, I don't think. No, I mean, I don't think we do. And I think all we can do is just use the protections that— You know, and just use some good common sense and good, you know, let some of these people that do this, that are professional with it, get to the government. You know, the government's got a bad habit of saying, I'm the government, we know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people on the outside that know more. I mean, you know, look at UPS and the U.S. Mail Service. I mean, you know, big difference.
But we just got a funding bill or funding deal. It sounds as if you're saying we need to put more resources into this.
I definitely think we do, and because it's a big question. We need to decide to, you know, if we know we get hacked, how are we going to respond?
And this is the one thing that Republicans, Independents, and Democrats can all agree on. And I completely agree with the congressman. You should not have an ongoing discussion of how much, you know, we need as much money as we can to basically make sure that the infrastructure is in place to prevent the attacks for shutting down the government for so long. And I can tell you this, the one thing that Georgia is going to be on the record, I mean, we're going to be in the national spotlight because of what the alleged voter suppression and voter irregularities that went on this past election. And our next constitutional and even these upcoming 2020, we're going to have the national spotlight on us. And I hope that we have gotten the infrastructure in place and we got enough funding to make sure that if hacked, we can bounce back from it pretty quickly. But then we also took some preventive measures to prevent it from happening.
Well, Dean, let me say this. You know, the complexity of this is everything's interconnected. So they may could get on somebody's Facebook page that worked for a company that had the data that could then get into their computer and do that. And so, I mean, this thing, it's like the Chattahoochee River. It could start out with just a little trickle and then you know, get into the ocean. That's the complexity of what we're dealing with. So it's not just any one little instance you can look at. It's hard to play defense. And then, too, it's just like this last thing that came up with the facial aging, you know, kind of thing. People jumped all over that, and then to find out it's coming from a Russian program. So
it was a Russian entrepreneur.
It's a Russian entrepreneur. That's another way they could get into your photo files, get into those people's Facebooks, find out who they are, know how to advertise to them. I'm telling you, it's dangerous.
From that, let's go back to the upcoming election, and particularly, Theron, some polling on the Democratic side in the presidential race. New polling from NBC and SurveyMonkey shows Joe Biden with 31% support among Georgia Democratic primary voters. Senators Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders at 15, 13, and 12, respectively, basically a statistical tie among those three. But Joe Biden, while his overall national support has sagged a bit, is still in a pretty strong front-running position here in Georgia.
Absolutely, and it's because of name recognition, but also, you know, we all love Uncle Joe. And Uncle Joe is someone who spent a lot of time here since he was finished being the vice president. I think, too, you know, listen, there's an ongoing debate in the Georgia party right now. You know, you still have, believe it or not, it's only a few of them, some Sam Nunn Democrats, right? And then you have some of what I consider myself more of a Michael Thurman Democrat, which is don't get too crazy in the primary, don't scare white people, and be pro-business and pro-jobs and pro-healthcare. And but you can do that without compromising your commitment to your heritage and your party. But then we got this new style of Democrats, right? These are, you know, progressive, younger, and some seasoned that really just believe we should just be extremely progressive. They're really big on, you know, protecting women's reproductive rights. They're talking about reparations. They're talking about protecting the minority business enterprise for minority business owners. They're talking about full Medicaid expansion. I mean, just to name a few issues that you can't even have a sensible conversation with them. And so I do believe while Joe Biden is up right now, if those other names that you mentioned, particularly Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, or Elizabeth Warren, and even, believe it or not, I'm still giving the guy a chance, even Beto, right? And even Buttigieg, but... Mm-hmm.
But he's got the money.
Yeah. It's really going to depend on two things. Who's going to really put together the best operation? Because as I've known right now, you have Mayor Bottoms, who's come out and supports Vice President Biden. You got the minority leader of the House of Representatives, Bob Trammell, who's come out for Kamala. And I think I don't know if there's any other high profile names that have come out. Mm-hmm. For folks here.
I think Max Cleland endorsed Biden a long time
okay.
ago.
Okay. Yeah. And so... If these presidential campaigns feel that Georgia, which I think as of right now is the only state on its primary day, and if they think it could be a part of the mathematical equation to get 270 electoral votes, you may see one of these candidates challenge Joe here, not to just beat him in Georgia, but if that person, he or she, would go on to be the nominee, they want to lay the groundwork. Because if we can't win Florida, and if we can't win North Carolina, and Lord knows we got to hold on to Virginia— Georgia could possibly be in play, but it all depends on who the nominee is at the top and also who the Senate nominee is for the U.S. Senate is going to be as well. Those two people have got to be able to work well together.
Congressman, are Republicans that worried about that at this point here in Georgia?
About Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I think Biden will win Georgia. I mean, he's a great candidate for the South. He's, like Theron said, Uncle Joe. I mean, you know, he's not going to come down here and offend anybody. We're used to gaffes down here. So, I mean, you know, if he comes down here and does that. So, I think they realize that Biden's going to take that. But the Senate race is going to be big. And who is in that primary for the Senate race? Because if you get a good African-American female woman, then that's going to bring out more of those votes who might vote for Elizabeth Warren or Kamala or, mm-hmm. or one of those. So I think Biden's got to be real careful of who that Senate person is to be able to come out of the Democrat primary here.
Two quick things. On our last podcast, we talked about the 7th District in Gwinnett County primarily and how crowded both parties' primaries are. Congressman, let's talk about the 6th, that North Atlanta, North Suburbs District, where Lucy McBath is the incumbent Democrat, having upset Karen Handel. Karen Handel is back, but State Senator Brandon Beach, who pulls from some of the same area of support that she does, is taking her on. And now there's construction company owner Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is looking at this.
Well, I do know Brandon, and of course I do know Karen. Brandon's got a pretty good history with the transportation industry and with economic development, and I think he's been a good state senator. Karen, you know, has been Secretary of State. She ran for governor. She went for the Senate. She won her congressional seat, and now she's trying to get it back. And I think the only thing Karen's got to be real aware of is people having Karen fatigue.
And Senator Beach has gone after her, saying she has not supported President Trump's policies strongly enough. In that district, is that a winning formula, though?
Well, it depends. If you're going to be talking to them about his economic policies, his defense policies, and the economic policies could be a big deal in that 6th district.
How worried should Lucy McBath be, Theron?
I think Lucy's in a really good place right now. Congresswoman McBath, the other thing that she's doing is that she's spending an enormous amount of time in the district, but she's also raising good money. And so that's a perfect segue into one of the things that I think that has not been highlighted. Chairman Beach actually outraised Karen Handel in this last financial quarter.
Oh, really?
He actually raised, I think, roughly about $20,000 to maybe $25,000 more than she did. And so when I look at those numbers, I see that there is some Karen fatigue, and I think there's a group of people that Senator Beach can pull from. But the one thing that Senator Beach has got to uphill climb on is that, love or hate Karen Handel, you know who she is.
Yep.
You know, she's got name recognition. And so with Beach showing the ability to raise some early money, that was a big win for him. And I think you're right. I think if Beach is able to pull together his massive role in the support of expanded transit, and that's something that I think in that district would go very well. But also, he's got to be a little careful, but not get too cozy with Trump. Because if you're a Trump supporter, and then you're going to be really looking at the right time to say, okay, who supports the president the most? That may help you in the primary, but that may not help you going to the general. So I do think that that's going to be the top Republican primary to watch.
Watch the national money coming in from McBath. And that'll give you a good read as to where Pelosi thinks she is on the charts.
A former Georgia governor has been in the news a lot lately, someone you know very well, Congressman Sonny Perdue, now the agriculture secretary. There was a report in Politico last month that said his department has kind of soft-pedaled or even buried studies by its own scientists showing the effects of climate change on crops, for instance, carbon particularly. And when asked about it in Iowa, he said, look, there's no evidence that we're soft-pedaling these studies. He meets with the scientists all the time. But he expressed ambivalence about human role in climate change. He's also involved in the move of some of those research agencies from Washington, D.C. to Kansas City. In an administration where there are plenty of lightning rods, he suddenly become one after basically being pretty quiet for a while.
That's not difficult for Governor Perdue. I mean, I think he's used to kind of being a lightning rod with some of the stuff that he's doing. I do think that
You've crossed swords with him a time or two.
I did. But I do think if you look at the Agricultural Committee, you know, as a whole, I think he's done them very well, and especially the farmers in South Georgia. I mean, he went
with
to bat.
With the Hurricane Michael relief,
yeah,
for instance.
He went to bat with those guys pretty heavy. But, you know, as far as being a lightning rod, look, I think anybody that opens their mouth now is a lightning rod. And it just depends on who they want to put that lightning bolt towards as to what happens.
Sonny Perdue has one main advantage, though, Theron, in that he's not acting. He's the agriculture secretary.
Yeah, and I agree with the congressman. I think that former governor Sonny Perdue has done a good job. And look, Georgia was a direct beneficiary of having him in that position. And so, as the congressman just pointed out, the former governor Sonny Perdue, who we remember, who's very specific, if he wasn't for something, it wasn't going to happen, right? And he had an okay relationship that really evolved into a working relationship with his House and Senate caucus in the state. And so I do think that he is seeing what's happened to other cabinet members once the media starts to zero in on some of the things that you're doing. So I think this is an experienced enough elected official in his previous role to know that he got to be very, very careful about some of the things that's going on within his department.
Well, on a lighter note about him, especially when it comes to climate change, you could argue he had a role in that. He prayed for rain during the drought.
He did. That's exactly right. Sonny's a smart politician, and they're going to have a hard time getting around him.
One happy note in the middle of all of this, in the midst of hot debates in Congress and that crazy confrontation at a Publix between a Democratic state representative and a man over what they said to each other, if you're looking for a way for how to debate, look at the Atlanta debate team that won the Harvard Debate Council's summer tournament. 17-year-old Grady High School senior Jordan Thomas took individual honors there. The team itself completely dominated, and all 25 members are African American.
Listen, this is something that, you know, when you look at that movie that Denzel Washington and other great actors and actresses were in, you know, that really inspires so many of us who we know that in our education system, many students of color don't always start on, you know, second base and third base like some other students. And so for these great group of young debaters to go out and really to have great teachers, and they received a lot of money from people across the country. I know there was an advisory board here, many lawyers and philanthropic leaders that actually raised the money for them to be able to compete. So it's really, really a good way to show that Georgia, as sometimes when we're in the national headlines for some negative stuff, to actually show that we are a state that can have great, you know, young students like this that can go on and do great things.
Yeah, I mean, they need to take these young folks and interview them because, I mean, you know, all these people are psychologists are doing all these studies about, you know, what it took to do this, what it takes to do that. These are living examples of the American dream. I mean, doing what a lot of people thought they couldn't do. And so I hope they'll take advantage of this and sit down and talk to those young people and find out what we can do, because right now that's a story that needs to be that should be on national news, really and truly.
And we may see some of those young people running for office too long from now.
No, they can't come and get on this podcast. me and Brian and the congressman occasionally. And, you know, we got it under control right now.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Congressman, I have to ask, when you were watching the Mueller hearings, did you think for a moment, boy, I missed this?
No, I did not. Dennis, that's, you know, I miss the clowns, but I don't miss the circus.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Filling in for Brian Robinson this time, former Georgia Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland. Thanks so much to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
And if you like this show, subscribe, and you can do that wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to rate us. That is a great way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.